Hi, Stevie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randy.
Do you remember when you first expressed an interest in music?
I've always had music around me. My mother was an operatic soprano. My dad was a sax player back in the World War II era. He actually had a, from the big bands, he had a band in Alaska. He put his horn down and became a commercial artist, but constantly was blasting jazz throughout the house and made sure that we all listened and appreciated and knew good music. And my uncle Mike was Fred Astaire's music director in the USO. So when I was very little, I was exposed to a lot of music and was always singing and playing. So it's been part of my whole life.
So you had a great beginning to your life.
Well, it was certainly musical. Great is another story. It was pretty good. Actually, my father, who was a little bit on the manic side, really force-fed us. And I think there was a time when we were little kids, because I also grew up around rock and pop and folk, and I was the youngest of seven kids. So there was a lot of different music I liked. But I first resented his force-feeding of the music, and then later grew to appreciate it wonderfully. And it was a good growing up. It was, when you're little, it's nice to have a lot of brothers and sisters around. So lot of music, just a lot of fighting for, one room there was jazz, another room there was classical, another room my sister would be blasting, Emerson, Lake and Palmer or James Taylor or something like that. So we had a lot of variety in my house.
What are some of your favorite jazz recordings of all time?
Wow. Well, I mean, Stan Kenton, Cuban Fire is brilliant. I don't even know where to go with it since I'm a vocalist. There are just too many great vocal records. I don't think I could answer that. I have about 30 Ella records and Carmen McRae records and Mel Torme and Sarah Vaughan. I actually love Joe Mooney too, who you don't really hear too much of anymore. Yet I always loved the way he did T for Two. He used to do. He was a blind musician and singer, and very smooth sounding. And he used to do a T for Two, and the way he started it was do you long for oolong like I long for oolong, baby? It was very, very, very cool, very hip, very sexy, and just love it.
Who are some of the important influences on your singing?
Well, certainly some of the ones I mentioned. I grew up listening to Ella and Sarah Vaughan and Carmen McRae. Wow, I also grew up listening to a lot of Joni Mitchell and Carly Simon. I can't say who really. I think when I was really developing my instrument, even though I can't say stylistically, I am in anywhere the same boat as like a Mel Torme, but I would say that his control really impressed me. Sarah Vaughan's just sort of letting it all hang out influenced me a lot, and Carmen McRae's very intelligent phrasing and subtle approach influenced me. Probably I've listened to more musicians even than vocalists, so I have too many influences.
Now,
It's all a mishmash in my brain now.
you mentioned Joni Mitchell. Now, I've spoken to a lot of vocalists, and that's the one name that keeps cropping up. And I'm just wondering, what is it about her singing that you really like so much?
She's a brilliant songwriter and musician. I think her singing, I think she was just, it wasn't as much the actual sound of her instrument as it is what she does with it, her freedom, just complete unabandoned, quality. She just very, very free, very fluid and uninhibited style that I admired. And her choice of phrasing too.
If there was only one person living today that you would love to perform or even make a recording with, who would that be?
I'd love to sing with Kurt Elling. I've recently discovered him, and I think he's a genius. He's probably, like, without a doubt, one of the most brilliant vocalists of all time. Well, we'll stop there. That's as a vocalist. Instrumentalists, there are just tons of great guys and gals out there who I'd love to work with. So.
Stevie, we have a living legend by the name of Tony Bennett who will be celebrating his 80th birthday this year, and I just want to know what your thoughts are on this great musician.
Well, first of all, he's a lovely human being. I have met him a couple of times and been backstage with him at some events. And he's a truly lovely, lovely human being. He's a gifted artist and painter. He is he's like the Rock of Gibraltar, you know, completely reliable. You know you can count on him. You know what you're going to get from Tony Bennett, and it's warm. From where he's coming from, it's a very warm, sincere sound. I think that Tony can definitely swing, and basically at this stage in his life, he's having a good time, just delivering, you know, his favorite music in a very honest, sincere way. I think he's one of our great vocalists, no doubt about it. I'll tell you my favorite performances of his. And the guy who promoted it is a man who has presented me in concert a couple of times, Sid Bernstein, who brought the Beatles to America. Sid presented Tony at Carnegie Hall, I think it was 1963, and that's a great album. It's a two album set. I mean, now it would be a two CD set, but I still have the LPs. And he was really, for me, he was sort of at his hippest then, and really, really swinging. It's a great album.
I want to get to your latest release, More Than Words Can Say. Now, I want to know, how long did it take for you to record this album?
We did it over several weeks. Rehearsed with the band a couple of sessions. I would say we did it within 5 weeks or so. Once I go into an album, we're pretty prepared and don't like to let it go over too many months or years, which some of my colleagues do. But it was a great experience. We had, I used two different trios of some really, really hot musicians around town here, but actually I have quite an international crew. I used one trio with Martin Bejarano on piano and Hans Glaueschnig, who's German but now in the States, and Einar Skeving, who is an Icelandic drummer, and he's actually gone back to Reykjavik, Iceland, so we're very sorry to lose him right now from the States. And then the other trio is a young woman named Chris Davis, who's a brilliant composer and pianist, and her husband Jeff is on drums. Very, very varied group of musicians, and then we had a string orchestra, of course, on several tracks, and my partner Gary William Friedman did the orchestrations and arrangements. It was a deep, deep labor of love. We're very excited about this album. We have some original songs on it, and I put some of my all-time favorite classics on there too.
Are there any first takes on the album?
Oh yeah, there are a lot of first takes. But where do I begin? Most of them are. First of all, what happens is a lot of times, I'll do something. First, I think I'm unhappy with it, so I'll do a lot of takes. I think I'm going to do what's called a composite, and then we end up throwing all of that out and just going with one take. So much of what's on the album is pretty much a solid take for each song, and in many cases, the first take.
Did you find it difficult selecting material for the album?
No, never, never. It's difficult. It's difficult editing material because there's so much that I want to do and that I want to put out there. We put four original songs on, and we limit it to that because I feel that it's, you know, for my audience right now, it's nice to do a combination of giving people material that they're familiar with, even though I try to reinvent it and do my spin on it. But we had to whittle down our original tunes and decide which ones to put on. And then as far as the other songs go, no, I'm never searching. It always naturally evolves through, if there's a year between an album or 2 years between, you know, it's during the course of performing and living, the materials, it piles up. And then when you have a chance to record it, you have to just sort of say, okay, what can we take out of this stack and make sense of in a record?
I'm going to ask you a very difficult question, and I hope you're up for the challenge. How would you define jazz?
Dizzy Gillespie said, if you have to define it, don't do it. Yeah. To me, it is just complete It's like three. It's three tiers. Jazz is the soul of music. It is the essence. It is taking what is trained and learned and studied, and then throwing it all away. That's your foundation, and finding the freedom to improvise, to innovate, to invent and explore on your own, and finding one's own sound within music and within a particular piece of music or song.
What is it about jazz standards that make them so captivating generation after generation?
Well, I would give that's a two-part answer, because I think the whole concept of a standard is, you know, something that stands the test of time. And I think that a lot of what we call our great standards, first of all, many of them, and many jazz standards, you know, came out of the theater. And I think we're really talking about just great standards in general. And these are songs that have solid melodies, solid lyrics. They completely transcend time. And I think the great jazz tunes are, you know, you're looking at sophisticated chord structures that just the ear never tires of. So that's about as brilliant as I can be on that one.
I'd like to go back to a very tragic moment in America's history, and that was September 2001. You mm-hmm. recorded something called This Is America. This must have been a really deeply emotional experience for you.
Well, it was, but I have to be honest. What happened was we were all devastated. I personally knew people. We had connections to. You couldn't be a New Yorker and not either know someone who was killed or know someone whose family member or friend was injured or killed. It was quite devastating. We, like I think most artists, were desperately scrambling to contribute in some way to help. We felt helpless. And I had written a song, This Is America, we actually wrote about a year or so before September 11. Alveda King, who is Martin Luther King's niece, was starting a movement. There's an organization called King for America. And the movement they were starting was called One America, where they wanted to sort of do away with all the titles African American, Italian American, Irish American, Armenian, you know, Asian, Native American, whatever, and just stop labeling. You're all Americans. You know, it's a big melting pot. We're all Americans. Let's stop with all these titles, and because they're all so divisive. And so we wrote this song, and they were going to use it for their anthem, but unfortunately, I guess their movement was underfunded, or I don't know what happened. It just didn't really take off. So our song was sitting there, and after September 11, it just suddenly, because there was so much divisiveness in the country and in the fallout, I mean, there was unity through the tragedy, but there was a backlash of negative energy towards many Arab Americans, and it just seemed like perfect timing. So we went in and raised the money and did a big single of this and put it out, and chose a charity that was a scholarship fund for victims' family members, and raised money for that charity. And so in some way we tried to do something positive after the fallout of the tragedy. So that was that's the story behind recording that song and putting it out.
From a music perspective, what is it like living in New York City?
Well, it's very musical here, I can tell you that. You can hear a tune. You can hear a tune on every block, whether or not it's a pleasing tune, I don't know, but this is like the melting pot of the world. So you've got everything here. I mean, if you're interested in any type of music, whether it's Middle Eastern, African, Nordic, jazz, pop, classical, ska, raw, you name it, it's here. So it's very exciting, and it's competitive too. You know, there's a lot of energy out there, so you know, you can't sit on your duff if you want to get your music heard. You gotta get out there, and it's just great energetic environment for music here.
So New York inspires you?
Yes, it does. It inspires me, and sometimes it drives me crazy. Believe me, I want to get out of here plenty of times, too, and go up to wherever you are, which I think is probably quieter, I hope.
Very, yeah, it is.
New York, you cannot not be inspired by New York, and sometimes you need to just get away from it, because we've created so much energy here that it can be a little little daunting at times.
Do you have a vocal coach who keeps your voice in shape?
I am a vocal coach. I have studied for years. I studied since I was a teenager and worked with several top private instructors and studied in college. And then my last vocal coach, who passed away now, was a fabulous woman, Elizabeth Howell, very highly respected in this field. And I worked with her for years and basically got my technique pretty strong, that I don't need to work with anyone. I'm sure once in a while I could brush up, but since I'm regularly singing and working, I have my own technique, and I actually have a few vocal students of my own who I will work with occasionally, who are pretty serious about singing, and I share the technique with them. It's not like some secret potion or formula. It's just a good, strong set of scales, and it has a lot to do with just making sure that all sound is meaning and has meaning.
For the rest of 2006, what projects do you have on the go?
Well, we just released this album, so we're really trying to get More Than Words Can Say out there, and I'm going to be doing, I have some in-store performances here, and I'll be singing in a women's jazz fest in the fall, and actually in a cabaret celebration. I sort of keep my toes in a couple of different musical styles and environments here in New York. So I have several performances lined up, and we're trying to get together some kind of tour. We're a small label. I don't have Sony behind me right now yet. If anybody is a Sony executive listening to this, by all means, call me up. But we're planning on hopefully getting out there and doing a bigger tour. Just continuing to put music out there, Randy.
When I first heard your version of Day by Day, I was captivated by your vocal range and the sense of freedom in your voice. Now, my impression was that you really enjoyed singing this particular arrangement.
Oh, yeah, I did. Well, I've always loved the tune, and of course, the four freshmen have owned it for so many decades now, but we sat down and we kept banging our heads against the wall because we wanted something insane. We just wanted to do something crazy with the tune, and so finally, that one really came together in the studio, where we just, Gary had the guys and said, all right, you know, try this, try that. And suddenly we got this sort of wild jungle sound that we wanted. And what we were trying to create was like this insane opening out of the jungle. And then, you know, Jennifer of the Jungle steps out and tries to calm things down a little bit. But then towards the end of the tune, obviously, we pick up and get pretty zany with it. We just wanted to have fun with it.
I noticed towards the end of the tune, your voice really cuts loose, and you were singing like really, really high there for a while.
Yes, that's a B flat.
So
that's my high B flat.
So what is your octave range?
Well, it's very funny. I was looking at a review of this recent album on All Music Guide, and I saw that the reviewer for All Music Guide claimed that I had a 4-octave range. And I will tell you this, I don't think any human being has a 4-octave range. I don't think that is at all physiologically possible. Now, if anybody listening to this has a 4-octave range, please write me at my website and tell me, because I would love to know. My range is, I would say, a strong 3 octaves.
Of all the selections on More Than Words Can Say, do you have a favorite?
Being the youngest of 7 children, you know, very sensitive. It's like somebody asking my mother, do you have a favorite kid? They're all my little children, and I each one. There's a song, there's an original song on there called "Evening Song," which I lost my dad several months ago, and we sort of dedicated that song to him. And it's loosely relates to my relationship with him, so that has great meaning for me. "Evening Song," but I really every tune. Because my style and taste is so varied, each one just sort of like fulfills me and makes me really happy in so many different musical areas. So I can't say I have a favorite. I really love them all.
Now, the group of musicians that play on your latest recording, are they your regular working band?
I wish they would. Well, first of all, I would have... I don't think both pianists would like to travel with me, but I use the two trios because of this very fact, because I work with such top-notch musicians, and since I'm not touring so heavily right now and so regularly, it's impossible. The musicians are, these are such hot cats that basically I would need to provide them with constant employment. So I don't have a regular working band. I work with a lot of regular musicians. So we work together, and I have like performances lined up this fall. So if I have one date, Martin, can you do it? You can't do it. Chris can do it then. Or can Chris, you can't do it. So I have sort of a small, tight roster of some great musicians I work with. And I certainly on the album picked the best of them. So it's tough. You have to really, really have steady work to keep a regular band.
Now, your background is it half Italian, half Norwegian?
Yeah, that is correct. My father's side was Italian, and my mother was Norwegian.
Now, have you ever been to Italy or Norway?
I've been to Italy. I had a former boyfriend, BG, before my husband, we say, but who, one of the last times I went, he was actually serving as a godfather of his cousin's wedding in Calabria, so that was really quite an experience. That's down in the south of Italy. But I have been to most of Italy, not quite the far north. I have not been to Norway yet, but I have had some wild Norwegian experiences. I can share one fun little story with you.
Sure,
Okay. Well, my as I mentioned before, my mother was this beautiful operatic soprano, and she used to sing a lot of Edvard Grieg, and she sang this song, was the patron, saint composer of Norway, and she used to sing Jeg Elsker Deg. And when Gary and I were first working together, he said, enough of the Italian, let's tap into the Norwegian side. So I decided, I pulled Jeg Elsker Deg out of some folder, and so I went around in several shows and concerts, and I started singing a sweet little a cappella version of it, and then the trio would come in, and we did and I would do a little funny story about it, and how my husband has these Viking fantasies, and so I have to fulfill them every now and then, and it was sort of this little joke, Then one night we were talking about it, and we realized that the song really wasn't long enough. So since it was in the public domain, I decided to add new lyrics, and Gary added music to it, and we expanded it into this really big tune. And so when we released Restless Willow, my last album, we did a special press release just for that particular song that my mom wrote in Norwegian, and we sent it all over the place. And before I knew it, I was hearing from the ambassador, the consul general, and then the chamber of commerce contacted my publicist and said, we'd like to talk to Stevie Holland about an opportunity to sing for a Norwegian-American audience. Well, it turned out that last year was Norway's 100th anniversary of its independence from Sweden, and the king and queen were coming in. So I was invited to sing for the king and queen of Norway last year. So it was a lot of fun, and it was one of those things that be careful what you wish for. What started as a little fun joke doing this little Edvard Grieg tune turned into this whole big experience singing for the king and queen of Norway and writing something that these heavy hitters in Norway really related to. So it was quite a thrill. Now, needless to say, I had to peel my mother from the floor the day I told her I was singing for the king and queen of Norway.
when you sang for them, was that in Norway or was that in the States?
It was actually in New York. It was in New York. But I do hope to go to Norway soon, and I have some new friends over there now. So we're hoping to put that on the tour map, too.
What are you listening to these days, Stevie?
Oh, my goodness. Everything new and everything old. I just got Regina Carter's new album, I think, is wonderful, absolutely beautiful. And listening to, this is actually a little more classical music. My tastes are so varied, Randy, that I go back to a lot of old jazz recordings, which I can't stop listening to. Actually, I just put on a very crazy album the other day. It was from the early 60s, and the group is called the Double Six of Paris. There's another one for you. So now you got to check out Joe Mooney. And now you have to check out the Double Six of Paris. They were a vocal group in the 60s, and they do a brilliant arrangement of For Lena and Lenny, Count Basie's tune. There's a high soprano in the group, and her name is Christiane Legrand, and she's Michel Legrand's daughter. And a very, very fun, swinging, breezy vocal group. But I'm listening to lots of new stuff today. We just go through the decades in this house when we put music on.
Aside from singing, do you play any other instrument?
I noodle on the piano, and I noodle, which I really regret. I had started with piano lessons, and I had a sister who was brilliant and went on to study to be a concert pianist. So she sort of took over the piano, and I could never really practice enough. So I then moved on to guitar, and I wanted to just learn basic guitar, but I had this instructor that insisted that I do Spanish classical, so never got too far with that. So I'm a noodler, and I have a good, solid music head here, but as a vocalist, I'm also a performer, so I'm sort of happy to just stay away from the instruments and just get out there and sing.
Now, you studied at New York University for a while. What was the most important lesson that you learned while studying there?
How to pay for my rent and afford New York University. Well, I was in a program. I was a drama major, and I was because I'd had a lot of music when I was in high school, and so I was in an acting company, and we actually studied professionally 3 days a week, and then had our other studies the other 2 days of the week. So I think one of the most important things I learned, which maybe wasn't just at NYU, it was always just in my life, was to keep the balance between quote-unquote art and real life, and keep your feet on the ground, and always have a mixture, be a human being who's connected to the world while you create and create your art and hone your skills. Don't just get caught up in a world of being an artist.
Do you remember your first performance as a jazz musician?
My first performances, certainly when I was a teenager, I was doing more theater and pop, so I don't think I could claim to have honed any of my jazz chops. They sort of came out a little after, in the last decade. I think somewhere along the way in my performances here in New York, I sort of evolved a little more from cabaret and theatrics to swinging to wanting to work with better musicians and improvising more, and so somewhere in the last several years, I think there was one night where I broke loose, and I don't know where it was or when it was, Randy, but it was probably here in New York in a club.
Now, you have a background in theater and cabaret. Now, how has this experience helped you get to where you are now?
Well, I think it all just goes into the mix. Basically, I will. If somebody's a brilliant musician, I will sit and listen to the set and enjoy them, and that's all that matters. But if somebody can give me a little more than that, like maybe be a little entertaining, I think that's great too. We're all human. I think we respond to entertainment. So I think if you can, my goal has been to try to combine being entertaining, communicating with my audience, having something to say, and also honing my chops as a good musician. So the cabaret and theater just helps lighten it up and helps me to not stay so serious about the music, just to have fun and remember that I also want to put a smile on somebody's face and entertain them.
How has the emergence of the internet helped your career?
Oh, well, undoubtedly it has expanded my potential audience and allowed me to reach people I, may never have been able to get to. It also empowers the artist, certainly the independent artist, to connect in ways, unthinkable. We have access to the world now. So it's great, and it's a lot of fun being able to have a website and have people be able to come directly to you and communicate, and it's a lot easier than opening up letters with a letter opener. You can just click on and read your mail. It's wonderful. It's just opened up the world, I think, for all of us.
Stevie, I'd like to thank you for dropping by today. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you, Randy. It's been a pleasure as well. And I hope that we have a chance to meet when I, one of these days, get up your way. And I'm so glad that you enjoyed More Than Words Can Say. And my best to all of your listeners.